On. So here we are at Mishnah 2. And the Mishnah says, Esrim v'shtayim oisiyos yisod, 22 foundation letters, chakakon, he carved them, chatzvan, he used, hewed them, shoklan, weighed them, tsarfan, refined them, vehemiron, and substituted them. V'tsar bohem, and depicted with them nefesh kol hayitzir, or shaped or healed the soul of every existing creature, and v'chol ha'osid lotzur, everything that was going to be created in the future. And as you may have noticed, the word tzar, yitzir, you know, we say Adon Olam Hashem Molach B'terem Kol Yitzir Nivram. We usually translate Yitzir as something that has been formed, like Sefer Yitzira. But I want to say, as we'll see, that there is more to that phrase, or to the word. So let's go and look at number 19. Esrim V'shtayim Oisiyos Yisod, 22 foundation letters, Pirush. Oysom she'amanu le'el b'perik aleph Mishnah Tes, those about which we said in the previous chapter and Mishnah Tes, she'oysiyos nechtsovos meruach, that the letters are hewn from the breath, v'oysoy haruach, and that breath itself is hewn meruach, shehi ruach ha'kodesh, because that was how the Mishnah began there. We had shtayim ruach meruach. The previous Mishnah before that was achas ruach. So you have the beginning of all creation is the breath. The next step is the expulsion, the breathing out of that breath, and that becomes the breath from breath. And that's where we said the 22 letters. The Mishnah said that in that breath there are the 22 letters. So here in this parak, in the second chapter, we're examining those letters. And what are we saying? Hen bo'ois b'koyach ois aleph mehasholosh emes. That all these letters, all these 22 letters, are really coming in the strength, on the strength of the letter aleph, as we shall see. Chokakon, he carved them. Where? B'peh, in the mouth. V'hiyaloshen, what is the instrument that you carve with in your mouth? That's the tongue. Hu ha'alef shedem olef b'mishnah ha'kadoma chok ha'machriya. In the previous Mishnah, we talked about, we have the kaf maznaim, we have the scales that have a pan on either side. On one hand, we have the letter mem. On the other hand, we have the letter shin. And in the middle, we have the aleph, which is the chok machriya, which is the tongue of the scales that points to one direction of another. So the aleph is the chok machriya. The aleph is that which carves. And as we're going to see in this Mishnah, he talks about how the aleph carves all the other letters. Kiteva ho aleph, if you think about the letter aleph, kishiroitzim levata oisa, when you try and pronounce the aleph, rak levada bepeh, if you just try it now with me, just try and pronounce an aleph without a vowel, eefsha, it's impossible, there's nothing to pronounce. All you can do is open your mouth and close your throat. But unless you have some movement of air passing through your larynx, you're not actually going to have a sound. And the letter aleph on its own, without a vowelation and unattached to any other letter, doesn't actually have a sound. Kein lo mifta. It doesn't have a pronunciation. It's a silent letter. Lo yishrekes. It doesn't hiss like the shin. Lo dimemes. And it doesn't hum like the mem. And this is precisely the reason that the aleph is considered the source of all other letters. Because when you get to the source, as we said in the first chapter in Mishnah Ches, that when you're standing right at the source, then you can't see the thing itself. Like you cannot see the forest for the trees, right? When you're standing in Shabbos, you can't see the blessing. Eh? There's no mon. The mon doesn't fall on Shabbos, because when you're in Shabbos, you're in the mokor of the bracha, you're in the source of the blessing. And when you're in the source of the blessing, you don't see the blessing. And when you're in the source of all the letters, there's no pronunciation there. Ba'ayin le'el, and if you look, we learned previously, Chakika, in the very first Mishnah, it says that God carved. And there we said that the idea of carving is associated with the Sefira of Malchut, the Sefira of Sovereignty, the very lowest of all the levels of creation, and it's the feminine. Ba'ayin tikkun ezoyah b'mama pasach elyon. And then there's a Zoha. It's a very famous Zohar. It's imprinted in most Orthodox Sidurim as a sort of introduction to the prayer. It begins, Pasach Eliyahu. Eliyahu opened and he spoke and he says, you God, you are one but not in number. And he gives a lengthy introduction to some of the Kabbalistic concepts. And there he talks about how the body, the right hand is Chesed, the left is Gevurah, the torso is Tiferet. Finally he says, Malchut. What is Malchut? Malchut Peh. It's the mouth. Torah Shabbat Peh Kerin Aleh. We call it the Torah of the mouth. Very, very interesting digression, and later in the Sefer Yetzirah we will talk about this at greater length. But the point is that Malchus is associated with the mouth. And he says there the Yesoid. If Malchus is the mouth, what comes before, what's the Sefira before Malchus? And he talks about Yesoid, which is Siyuma de Gufa Oispris Kodesh, the holy covenant of the circumcision. And everybody knows that Midas Yesod, that the Sefira, the ninth Sefira, which is called Yesod, is associated with the genitals. Malchus, Peh, and now you got Malchus, which is the mouth, which is the Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral Torah. What's the connection between this and this? Ki haloshon, because the tongue, he dugmas yisoid siyume degufa shechoykekes, because the tongue, in what it does, it is very similar to the penis, because just as one procreates, so does the other procreate, and just as there is a bris. Just as there is a covenant associated with the milah, so there is a covenant associated with the other kind of milah, which is the word. And so, when the Mishnah says that God chokekon, God carves them, pirish chof beis oisyos nechkeku b'malchus, the 22 letters are carved into the mouth, into this sefira of Malchus, b'koyach aleph, on the strength of the Aleph, in the mystery of the Losha, in the tongue, Shechekekes, because the tongue carves the breath into letters. And it makes all the letters a vehicle for the Shechina, which is Malchus. The next thing the Mishnah told us is that Chotzvan, that God hewed them. We've already spoken about the difference between carving and hewing, that when you're carving, the shape of what you say, for instance, if you were to take a stone and to make letters, writing, that would be called carving, because the shape of that which you leave behind is really important. But if you're hewing something, then it means you just want to remove the material to leave something. So the hewing, that what you know, you're using, let's say, a chisel or whatever, it's not that important how you use the chisel, because you're really just trying to remove the material from the rock to leave something there, which, for instance, if you make a cistern in a rock, so you basically want to dig a hole in the rock, that's called hewing. But if you want to make a statue in the rock, then that would be called carving. So they come from a different dynamic. So where do we find chotzvan? So a pasuk in Yeshaya, Yeshaya says, God says, Habitu el tzur chutzavtem. Look, God says to us, look to the rock from which you are hewn. Ve'al mikvas boyer nikresem, into that hole in the stone from which you were taken. And the Gemara says, and Gemara Nivomis Amid Ami, this pasuk in Yeshaya is talking about Avraham and Sarah. Avraham is called the Tzur, the rock, and Sarah is called Mikvas Boer, this empty hole. Why? Avraham and Sarah tumt min hoyu. Avraham and Sarah were sexless. They didn't have primary sexual characteristics. They were both like neuter. Until God changed them physically and they became capable of having children. Havashinema, and then Gemara says, and that's what it means, Hebitu el tzur chutzavtem, look to the rock from which you were hewn, mikvas boi nikresim. So Rashi says, what does it mean chutzavtem, from which you were hewn? How were we hewn from Avraham? So Rashi says, Nasaloi Zachrus, that God, so to speak, hewed away those parts of Avraham Avinu and left him with primary male genitalia that he didn't have. So like God does this hewing and takes away the material that is covering up Avraham and preventing him from being a man. Narrowly, it seems to me, Mimash Pirashnu Lael, if you go back and have a look at what we said in the previous chapter, Mishnah 9, Chatziva, Hainu Silik Vahasuris Chayim Legamri, that when we talk about ewing, we're talking about removing material rather than carving in the sense of making a statue. Lihisroikinus Alide Chatziva, what we're trying to do is create an empty space by ewing. We're not really interested in carving, right? What we're interested in is in removing material that is extraneous or superfluous. So then what was the hewing that God did to Avraham? He removes the foreskin from Avraham and makes room for Kedusha, for the holiness of the covenant. So then when we talk about when God says, look to the rock from which you are hewn, we're talking about the bris milah that Avraham performs. So now if we come back to this Mishnah and we say the 22 letters that God hewed, what does the hewing, how does that correspond to the milah that Avraham does on himself? Well, it's the same word again. The word for word in Hebrew is milah. So how does a person circumcise their own words? What does it mean? Just as Avraham is turned into this Merkava of Chesed, he becomes the paradigm of Chesed. As we see, as soon as he does the Bris Milah, then he's sitting there by the opening of the tent and he sees these three angels in the heat of the day and he goes, you know, God is there with him and he says to God, please don't go away. And he goes running after these strangers who look like, you know, just dusty travelers, and he takes care of them while God has to wait for him by the tent. Avraham becomes, with the Milah, he becomes a new level of Chesed and loving kindness. So that's what God does with the letters, is what we have to do with our letters. We have to make our words kind. Chasdei Avraham. And that's the meaning of Chotzvan, that God hews the letters, that he gives them the potential. In other words, we don't bark at one another, right? We don't croak at one another. We speak poetry at one another. We sing to one another. Right? The next thing is number 22, Shokla. So God weighs the letters. So the first time we find the idea of weighing, the word shekel, in the Torah, it says, Vayishkoil Avraham le'efrein es hakesef. Story, Sarah has died, she's 127 years old. And Avraham comes to Hebron, Kiryas Arba, and he asks to speak to Ephraim, the Hittite, and he says to him, please sell me the cave in the corner of the field of Machpelah. And he offers him 400 pieces of silver. And Ephron says, nah, I don't need it. What's 400 pieces of silver to me and you? Avraham weighs out every piece of silver. Vayishkel Avraham le'Ephron es hakesef. So Rashi says, shenotal mimenu shkolim gedolim. Ephron ended up taking from Avraham very large shekels. These were not silver dollars. This was like silver bullion, where each coin was kantrin, Rashi says. Kantrin are like hundredweights, hundredweight blocks of silver. Shinema oivel lesoicha. Because the Torah tells us that these were, you could pass them from one trader to another. Shemiskablim b'sheker b'komokan, that these bits of these bullion blocks that Avraham gave to Ephron, they were not simply coins, because, you know, coins, every city had its own coinage, and, you know, who knew what the base metal was and how pure it was. But these bits of bullion that Avraham weighed out for Ephron, they were internationally recognizable for their purity. You didn't have to go with a trader and then have it assayed to see how pure it was. You turned up with one of these, you could buy whatever you wanted. That's what Rashi says. Why is it important? What is Rashi trying to tell us? So, I think it means sha'ovrim lekol soicha afu b'she'ena makirim tzura samadbeah, that the bullion that Avraham weighed out for Ephron, well, was such a large denomination, right? It was like, you know, you see pictures of these blocks of gold bullion that they have in Fort Knox and stuff. Like, if somebody gives you one of those, if you can lift it up at all, right, you wouldn't then run along with it to a jeweler and say, you know, is this pure or not? I mean, hey, look, this is your gold, right? This is the original bullion from Fort Knox or wherever it is in Denver in the mint. Even though it's not in a coin form. Because if it's in a coin form, Avraham had tried to pay Ephron with coins, then they would have had to, you know, call in some experts to value the coins and say, this is how much they're worth here. Right? Shikulam mishkolam kesef mali, because the bullion was all like full weight. So traders everywhere, just they value it because of the purity of the silver, umishkolam, and because of the weight. Even though these bits of silver don't actually have like a head stamped, you know, heads and tails with all the information on it saying how much they're worth and how much they weigh. So Rashi's telling us, Avraham, shokal kol matbeah umatbeah, Avraham didn't say, all right, here's a bagful, or here's a roomful, or here's a truckload. He said to Ephron, it shall be exactly as you say, and he weighed out 400 pieces of this bullion, one by one. Not by counting them all and saying, here, there's 400 pieces. But each one, yeah, it, full weight, okay, here, take it, right? Why? Avraham acted as though he's coming from a distance with unknown foreign currency, right? And he's acting, you know, as like, I realize you're suspicious of me and I look like a con man, so here I'm going to prove my bona fides. Vizeh pirish Rashi kantrin. So now we understand why Rashi uses the word kantrin, which could mean hundredweight, but kanter also means that they were a rebuke. Because Avraham, by counting out, you know, by weighing out 400 pieces of silver in this way, it was an everlasting rebuke to Ephron, who just had his money on the silver, and he never really wanted to help Avraham find a place to lay Sarah to rest, which is what the whole exercise was about. So Rashi says, kantrin, because the word lekanter, it's like the English word to counter. So Avraham, what does Avraham do? He measures them in the scale, which is the image that the Mishnah is trying to give us of Sarah, that Sarah is the pivot of the scale. On the one hand, you have the mem represented by Miriam, On the other hand, you have the Shin represented by Chava, and in the middle you have the Aleph represented by Sarah herself. So in doing so, besides reproaching Ephron for his, you know, parsimony and his meanness and his greediness, in a sense, Avraham was working through the soul of Sarah, who is the image of the Maznaim, the scales. And so, in coming to bury Sarah and to purchase a plot for her, which is the Maras HaMachpelah, the cave which is still there today in Hebron, Avraham goes through 400 times, he goes through the act of weighing and measuring and deciding whether something is a full weight or not. And that's the Bechina of Aleph. That's what the Aleph does, it decides whether something is true to weight or not, as we said in the previous Mishnah. Tzarfon. The next thing God does with the letters is He purifies. How did we translate that? He refines. And when we talk about refining silver, we talk about tziruf. But you know, when we talk about the name of God, you know, sometimes when we write the name, if you look in Kabbalistic Sidurim, you'll see the name is written Yud Kei Vav Kei, and then between the letters you'll find an Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. These are called Tzirufei Shemois. And we don't think of them as refined names, but names that are joined with other names. And even though that name no longer reads Yud Kei Vav Kei in the simple form, but when you look at it, you can read the Yud Kei Vav Kei while uttering the name Adni, and then you are, in a sense, bringing your visual cortex together, you know, with your speech center, and so you pronounce the name of God. And it sounds like one thing while you're actually meditating. And these are called Shemois and Tzirufei Shemois. So the word Mitzaref, which is used in the refining of silver, it says in Mishlei Mitzaref Likesef, a crucible for refining silver, the kur, and a smelter, Lezohav. And so we have for silver, we have the Mitzaref, and for the gold, we have the kur. And When Moshe Rabbeinu talks about bringing us out of Egypt, he talks about bringing us out Mikur HaBarzel, from the smelter of iron. So Egypt was for us, you know, like a crucible, you know, where we were refined. But it's interesting. I want to examine the difference between the crucible that's used for refining silver and the smelter that is used for refining gold. So, tzoref hu hakeli shetzorefim bo hakesef davka. So the word tzoref, which I have translated as crucible, is only used for the refining of silver. Why? Kur, the smelter, hu keli shemetzorefim bo zohav davka. And the smelter is used only for gold. So in our Mishnah, it says that God refines like silver, right? Also, oison keli letzarif behem hakesef. Not that God refines the letters, but that God makes the letters into a crucible with which you can refine. Well, what can you refine in a tzoref? Only silver. But the word kesef for silver is also a word for desire. Like we say in Yedid Nefesh, ki ze kama nichsoif nichsafti, this long time I have been in a deep state of desire. The word kesef means desire. We find in Bereshis, Lavan says to Yaakov, Lavan goes chasing after Yaakov to find out why he's left without saying goodbye, and he said, "Va'atu now, haloi chalachto, go, ki nichsoif nichsafto lebeis avicho, go, because I know that you've been longing and in a state of desire to get home to your father Isaac." So in the Torah we find the word nichsoif nichsafti, kesef, is an expression of desire. So now, what keli, what vessel do you use for refining silver? You use a tzoref. But the word silver means, not just silver, it means desire. So v'tzorfan, when the Mishnah tells us that God makes the letters into a crucible for refining silver, it also means that God makes the letters into a crucible for refining desire, because it's through the letters and the speech that we are able to articulate what it is we want. And you know, when we think about purifying silver, if we use the word seraph in the way that we use it when we talk about Sirufei Ois, Sirufei Shemois, right? You have two names of God side by side. On the one hand, you have the name of God written Yudhei Vavhei, which we don't pronounce, right? So it's we read it with our eyes. On the other hand, we have the name Adni, which we pronounce out loud, right? Now we take these two words, we split up the letters, and we combine them. So it's written Yud, and then an Aleph, Hey, and then a Dalet, Vav, and then a Nun, and then the final Hey, finished by the final Yud, right? We look at that, and we see the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, but we read it Adni, right? We call that Siruf. So, if we think of silver, and instead of thinking of the refining process as being one where we remove the dross, instead we think of how can I bring all the bits of silver together. I don't care about the dross. I want to bring all the bits of silver together. That is how I am going to have the purest silver possible, right? And in the same way, I can do that with letters. I can do that with Shemos, and in the way I've just described, the way that the name of God is made into a tziruf. That tells us how, what we can do with the letters in general. Let's go to the next note. The next note is number 24. Vehemiron. So God substituted them. So it occurred to me the first time you find in the Torah the idea of substitution. God says to Avram, Lech lecho el eretz hamirio, go to the land of Moriah. V'haleu sham la'oilo, take Isaac and offer him up there as a burnt offering. So there's a machlokes, there's an argument among the sages. What does it mean, Eretz Moriah? We have Yerushalayim is called Mount Moriah. What is this word Moriah? Why isn't it just called? I mean, if he's taking him to Yerushalayim, then call Yerushalayim, right? Why does God refer to this place as Moriah? So Rashi, Pirush Rashi, Eretz HaMoriah, the land of Moriah, Yerushalayim. There it means Yerushalayim, and so we find in Chronicles it says, Livnos is based Hashem Yerushalayim, to build the house of God in Jerusalem, Behar HaMoriah, on Mount Moriah. Rashi continues, V'Rabbi Seinu Pirushu, and other sages have explained, Al Shem Shemisham HaYiro'o Yotzid Yisro, because the Torah goes out from Yerushalayim, therefore the word Torah and the word Hoiro'o is cognate with the word Moriah. So it is Eretz Moriah, a land of teaching, a land of Torah. The Unculus, on the other hand, you have Unculus, who translates it, Al Shem Avodas HaKetoras. It says, he uses the word Moriah, the way we do in English the incense, which is called myrrh. Myrrh and frankincense and other incense spices, right? So Eretz HaMoriah, Unkelis says, well, that's talking about the incense that one day that will be offered up in that place. Shiesh boi moir ned v'shar b'somim, the other kind of spices. That's what Rashi says. Rashbam was Rashi's grandson, was in the 12th century. He says, Moriah, hu em Moriah. It actually means there's an Aleph missing there, and it's the Amorite land. Harba Alfin Chaserin, you find many times in the Torah that a word is written without an Aleph. So we have four or five different translations of the word Moriah. Nera lefi anias dati, and here's what I think. HaMoriah, the word Moriah migzeres lo yevake ben toiv lera, if somebody says something, this animal is going to be holy for the temple, then he's not allowed, or if he's, you know, he's not allowed to say, oh, I didn't mean this one, that one's too good, you know, I'll substitute another one. Or he's not allowed to say, well, you know, I've got a better one. It's not a person is not allowed to substitute another animal for this animal. If he says this ox is going to the temple for a sacrifice, this is the one that he has to offer, not another one. So the word that's for substitution is yemirenu, and the root is tamura. So now we could say that the land that Avram is told to go up and offer Isaac is called Eretz Hamoria, Al Shem Akedas Yitzchak, because of the Akeda that is going to happen, Ushenishchatu Tamurosai Ail, and that there was a substitution, right? Isaac wasn't really killed. Instead of him, there was a goat, that a ram that was offered up, and that was a Tamura. Uksiv Shom, and then the Pasuk, where it talks about somebody who has said this animal is holy, it says Ve'im Homer Yemirenu, and if he substitutes another animal for that one, V'ho Yehu Utmurosu Yekodesh. So let's say a person sees that he's got a nice sheep, and he says, you know what, I'm going to take that to the temple, I'm going to offer it as a peace offering, right? And then he decides, nah, I've got a better one. So he says, all right, so that one should be an exchange for that one. So what does the Torah tell us? They're both holy now. Upirish heimiron zutachazu. So now, what happened? Avraham was told to offer up Isaac as a burnt offering. And then he was told to make a switch, a substitution. In that case, what does the halacha tell us? They're both holy. And that's why it's called Har Hamoria. It's the mountain, or Eretz Hamoria, the mountain of substitution. So Yitzchak is Gevura, Yitzchak is Esh, Yitzchak is fire, right? Which comes from the water, and this is substituted for this. And so we find by the letters that God takes the letters and substitutes the unkindness for the kindness, and even if we have a word that comes out of our mouth which is not so kind, we can then go back and explain it in such a way, or frankly we can apologize and say, you know, I wasn't feeling so good when I said that particular thing. And we have the ability to substitute one word for another word. Then the Mishnah says Vitzar, and we usually translate the word Vitzar as he depicted or he formed. Listen what I want to say. It doesn't say Yotza. The Mishnah doesn't say, and God formed or molded things with them. It says Tzar. Shehim Igzeiras Vatikach Tzipor Tzar. The first time we find this word Tzar in the Torah, very interesting. It's in the beginning of Exodus. Moshe leaves Jethro, his father-in-law, and he takes Zipporah and his children to go to Egypt. It says, and he was in a caravanserai, he was in a hotel, and bad things started to happen, and Zipporah took a tzur, which we usually translate as a flint, a sharp stone, and she circumcised the boys, and Moshe's life was saved. So most of the commentators translate the word tzor, Vatikach Tzipor Tzor, that it's something sharp. She took something sharp. Mostly, you know, one of those, they used to sharpen flints, and you know, Ismail Charif, a sharp knife, K'moy Charbis Tzurim, like, you know, double-sided knives or whatever. Sefer Ksava Kabbalah, there's another commentator on the Torah, and he learns it differently. He says, in the Medrash of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, we learn like this. In the Mechilta of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, Mahu Tzur, what is, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says, what does it mean, she took a Tzur? So Reb Shimon Bar Yochai says, Tzur is Asphus, she took a balm, an ointment, something that heals. And the Sava Kabbalah says, Nira Shepirishu Min Hatsuri Ein Begilad, there is a pasuk that it says, Hatsuri Ein Begilad, is there no balm in the Gilead? Nimtze Gam Kein Choylam, there we find it's written with a Tzoyri, Upanag, udvash, v'shemen, v'tzoyri. In different places in scripture we find this word, and it refers to spices and herbs that heal. So now the Aksava Kabbalah says, so what does it mean that Tzipora did? V'tiyat kicha satzur ken ikre b'somim v'same refua. So when Tzipora was about to do the bris milah, when she was about to do the circumcision on her son, she took these healing herbs and spices. She made an ointment or a poultice. Lahatzmoy saboset, to reduce the swelling. Lahashkit ba'adam, and to prevent excessive bleeding. Ulerapoy sechabura, and to heal the wound, right? So now, if we say that the word tsar doesn't mean something sharp, right? Like the commentators mean it, a sharp stone or something that you could perform the circumcision with. But tsar can actually mean something that heals. Now, if we look at the Mishnah, v'tzar b'hem, and God heals, sheyesh b'chol ha'osyos shnei koyachos ha'elu, because the truth is that all the 22 letters have this ability, which is like really opposing. They have contradictory abilities. Lachtoich k'cherev chad, on the one hand, our words can cut, our words can wound like knives. Ulerapus ka'achas, and also our words at the same time have the ability to heal like a balm, like a cream and an ointment. And that is one of the miracles that God has given us, that it's not even sometimes different words, sometimes the very same word, depending on the tone or what it is or how we look when we say it, has the ability to heal, whereas previously it had the ability to wound. B'tzar bohen, now we go to note number 26. With them, so you could actually say B'tzar bohem, and God fashioned in them, as it is written, Dvorei bohem, and his word is in them. Kavanose, what it means, Shitzar bohem, k'moy b'toychan v'leimin, that God took the letters, and not that he used the letters to make a wound or to make a healing, but that the letters themselves contain within them both the wounding and the healing. Because the letter Aleph contains within it all the other letters. And each letter also contains within it all the possibilities. So now, there's two things that we're going to be looking at. Sheyesh b'china, there is a way of looking at things. Sheruach kol dova hanimtza kva, that the spirit of everything that already exists, kva kosu v'roshim toicha oisis. You could say that everything that exists in the world, Hershi, right? Yirmiyahu Tzvi, that I exist because the name Yirmiyahu Tzvi already exists before I exist. And that everything that has ever happened to me, that will happen to me, is already there in the letters of my name. Ludugma, for example, Zera Ilan. If I look at a seed, let's look at an acorn, right? It's a seed of a tree. Yesh b'toichoy shnei b'chinas kelalon. This acorn that I have in my hand, it has in it these two aspects. One, it has nefesh kol hayitzir. It has within it the soul of every created thing, which means chiyus turshoti. It has the hereditary history. This acorn that I hold in my hand has the history of the tree from which it came, but it also has within it the genes and the DNA of all the oak trees from which it is descended. Mibriyas Olam Arad, from the first acorn on the first oak tree, in the beginning of creation until now, Kulam Nitnu Koicham Lezerahi, all of them have given their koyach, their power, their genes in this acorn that I'm holding in my hand, V'nimtzim Boi K'moy Nefesh, and they are like the soul in this acorn. And on the other hand, Kol Ha'osid L'tzur, everything that is, so all the letters are like that acorn. They have within them everything that has ever existed. These 22 letters have within them Because, you know, you can take the Torah, open up a Sefer Torah, and what do you see? Just 22 letters, right? So these 22 letters that you see on the page here, they're the same 22 letters that contain the Ten Commandments, the story of Esther, whatever it is. It's all already there in the 22 letters. The On the other hand, this acorn that I hold in my hand also contains Hazera Yeshboi Komashi Starach Letzmiches Elan Chodesh. It contains everything that's necessary for the creation and the birth of a new oak tree. Kielo Elan Achodesh Kosovo Roshim Tech Garin Hazera. As though that new oak tree that will come is already written into the genes of the acorn that I'm holding in my hand. Ukumuvan. And it stands to reason also, Shigam Hadoir Hasheni Shivoled Achrav, that the next generation of trees that will be born from the acorns that were going to be born from the tree that is going to be born, and so on. Sho'idlis Chanisha, they haven't really come into existence yet. Gam Hirushuma, that is also there, even though it is going to be changed by swapping its DNA with another oak tree. Nevertheless, these genes that are here are going to carry on. And so they are the soul that is going to carry on down the line. So within the 22 letters that we have here on our page and on any Hebrew page, the whole of creation is already there, from beginning to the end. Because each letter contains within it all the 22 letters and all the possibilities. And all the power, all the potential. And this, if we go back and we look at the 8th Mishnah in the first chapter, we see that the 22 letters first appear carved and hewn out of the breath which came from the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit, which was, we said, Bechinas Elokim Chaim, the Living God. What is the Living God? Shekol HaChayis VaHaHavaya Bo Min HaBechina HaHi. That all existence, all being, comes from that God expressing the life force and allowing the process of evolution and of life to become and to be. Min HaBechina HaHi, from that concept, from that conceptual being, comes Shoresh Kol HaChayim VaHavaya, the source of every aspect of life and being. I think we'll stop there this week.